Tonight's shir is dedicated to Ilanishmas Rivka Bas Avraham. Tonight we have the privilege of studying together Parshas Re'eh. We're a little off our schedule over here because usually we only meet every other week, but this week we met 2 weeks in a row. Gives us the opportunity to learn together two Parshias in a row together, Parshas Ekev and Parshas Re'eh. Mirtz Hashem, next week we will not have the Parsha class, but Mirtz Hashem we will have the regular Halacha Shir in person and hopefully on Zoom. Zoom option, Mirtz Hashem next Tuesday night as well. We come to Parshas Re'eh, and Parshas Re'eh is continuing the theme set out in the beginning of Sefer Devarim, where Moshe Rabbeinu is continuing to advise and guide and to lead the Jewish people with advice that they'll need when they first enter into Eretz Yisrael. In this week's parasha, we're going to notice a little bit of something different. In this week's parasha, we're going to see that Moshe Rabbeinu is going to focus a little bit more about Eretz Yisrael. Obviously, we know that the Torah is made up of many, many mitzvahs, and there are very special mitzvahs about living in Eretz Yisrael that don't pertain to living in outside of Eretz Yisrael. And this week's parasha, Moshe Rabbeinu is going to focus on some of the, what we'd call the chashivas, the value, the importance, the significance about living in Eretz Yisrael, and some of the mitzvahs that are connected to living in Eretz Yisrael. That's a little bit different of what we've been discussing till now. Till now, it's really just been general ideologies and hashkafa about Judaism. But in this week's parasha, we're going to see a very big focus on Eretz Yisrael, its role in our lives, and its mitzvahs, its commandments, and its regulations. As well as we're going to learn in this week's parasha, what to do when you're presented with temptations. This week's parasha, Moshe Rabbeinu, again, this is all Hashem speaking through Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't make up Mishneh Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu was just repeating ideas and advice through Hashem and from Hashem, especially the mitzvahs. And Moshe Rabbeinu is going to tell us about a whole chapter in this week's parasha of what I like to call Nisyonis. Person's tempted, he's tested. We're going to learn in this week's parasha about the Mesis. The Mesis is the neighbor who's trying to get you to the Avodah Zarah, the Navi Sheker, the false prophet who comes to town. And this is not something that was only the times of the Chumash. We've had false prophets through many different eras in Judaism. We'll talk about the 1700s and the 1800s, the different Nevi'im Shekarim that we've had. And then at the end of the parasha, the Torah talks about another type of nisoyin. That's a nisoyin in your avodas Hashem. Do you accept this new version? Do you accept this new path in life? Or do you stick to the conservative, traditional path in life? So that's one level of nisoyin. And that's a nisoyin that we grapple with today also. There's so many new inventions. There's so many new ways of doing things. We have to take a step back and ask ourselves, am I moving away from traditional Judaism? Or am I not? That's one very deep question that people struggle with all the time today. You know, because we have technology, we have advancements, we have new things. We often have to ask ourselves, is this in line with our Messiah? Is this in line with what our ancestors did before us? Obviously, they didn't send out WhatsApp of Halacha Shurim. They didn't send out, you know, recordings of Divrei Torah. But that's not necessarily against our Messiah. But when we have different things that come into our lives, and we have to always ask ourselves, where does this line up in our tradition and our Messiah? But there's another set of nisyonis, which I believe is found in this week's parasha as well. And that is all hovered around mammonis. Now, mammonis, money, is a very, very, you know, touchy topic in people's lives. Because everyone likes money. Everyone likes money, especially money that they earned and they worked for. And the last thing people want to do is really give it and share it with other people. So in this week's parasha, we have a lot to discuss about tzedakah, and Meiser, and even the end of the parasha talks about freeing your Eved Ivri. Because again, freeing your Eved Ivri has a lot to do with money. Person has Eved Ivri, he bought him, he owns him, and yet he has to send him free by Shemitah, by Yovel. These are major nisyonis in the realm of Mammon. So there's really two major, if I had to summarize this week's parasha, there's two major nisyonis that the Jewish people are being warned of from Moshe Rabbeinu. One is the nisyonis of staying on the traditional path of Judaism, not being swayed and not being convinced by new things, new people, to go off the path of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then the second group of nisyonis are the nisyonis of mammonis, the very strong temptations that we have to not perhaps treat our money the way we're supposed to, or perhaps have a healthy relationship with our own money. That would be, in my opinion, a very, very basic overview of what to anticipate in this week's parasha. And the third thing that we mentioned is Eretz Yisrael as a very strong place in this week's parasha as well. So let's start from the beginning of the parasha. We'll try to get through as much as we can, and we'll try to discuss some of the major lessons from the parasha. Perhaps we can spend an entire shiur on the first pasuk of this parsha. The first pasuk of this parsha has many, many kashas, many observations, many ha'aris, and much, much to learn from. It seems to be a very innocent pasuk. It only has a few words in it, but it's a very jammed-packed pasuk with a lot for us to get to. So let's start with the first pasuk. First pasuk opens up with the word re'ei, see, anochi ayin nosein lefneichem, and giving in front of you hayoyim today brachu klo. As the pasuk opens up, as Rav Shechter points this out, that the Torah opens up with the realization of life that we all have free will and free choice. We all have bechira. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, listen, I'm giving you a choice. There are two paths you can take in life. You can take the bracha path, you can take the klala path. Nothing is predetermined and nothing is pre-made up. Everything is up to you. And this is a very empowering idea in Judaism, that we have bechiras chavshi. We can do what we want. We can decide to live a path of Torah and mitzvahs and follow Hashem to the T, and we can live a path of destructive behavior and do what we want, and no one will stop us. We all know, as religious Jews, we have any one of us has the right and the ability to go up to McDonald's and buy a cheeseburger, and you will probably not be struck down with lightning. And you could turn on the light switch on Shabbos morning, and you probably will not be struck down with lightning. Why is that? Because Hashem gave us all bechira. He gave us the ability to choose whether or not we want to follow Him or not. Now, it doesn't mean, like the Rambam says, Rishus biyad kol adam, and Rav Shechter quotes this from Rabbi Soloveitchik. It doesn't mean that Rishus doesn't mean that we can decide to live the life or not live the life and not have consequences. And it means that we can choose to make mistakes that we'll have to eventually pay for. But we have that right to make that mistake. Meaning, we're not forced to do anything. But if we don't do what we're supposed to do, we will get punished. But you can do it. Meaning, you can eat that cheeseburger, you can turn on that light, nothing will happen. But you will get punished from HaKadosh Baruch Hu for doing what you did. But you still have the choice. You're not a robot. You have the option to decide what you want to do and what you don't want to do. So that's really the opening message of this week's parasha, is Bechiras Chavshi. We all have the right to choose what type of life we want to live. Right? We live in a democratic country. Here in America, everyone can decide what they want to be. You want to be a doctor, you want to be a lawyer, you want to be this. So in Judaism, we all can decide what we want to be. Now, it doesn't mean that if I decide to live a path of klola that I'm not going to be held accountable. We will be very much held accountable, but we can live such a lifestyle. And not necessarily will lightning strike the person down who's living such a lifestyle. So that's Aleph Beis of this week's parasha. And it's an important message to think about, that we all have bechiras chavshi. We all have the right to choose the path. I don't mean the right versus wrong, but we all have the ability to choose the life we want to live and the path we want to take. Hashem says, Rei, anochi nosein lefneichem bracha klola. Listen, I'm giving you two paths in life. You have the blessing path and the cursed path. You can do what you want. And Hashem says, if you go the blessing path, it means you listen to the mitzvahs. And then the klala path means you don't listen. You go off the derech. And you don't do what you're supposed to do. Very simple. Two choices. You could do the right thing or you could do the wrong thing. So that's really the opening intro to this week's parasha. But there are many, many observations on this first seemingly innocent pasuk. First of all, the question is, why is it the lashon re'ei to see? Generally speaking, when you want to get someone's attention, you usually say the lashon to listen. Shema, not re'ei. What's the famous pasuk? Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem. Listen. Listen, Jewish people. Listen. Vayishma Yisrael. Yisrael heard. Why is it re'ei to see? So why do we choose the sense of seeing over the sense of hearing? The other kasha that the Mefarshim all ask is that the word anochi is singular. Lifneichem is plural. Why does the Torah jump from talking to the singular to talking to the plural? Who are we talking to? Are we talking to the mass of the Jewish people? Then it's plural. Then it's lifneichem. But if we're talking to one individual, then it's anochi. So why is the pasuk flipping back and forth from the singular to the plural? And then the third question that many people ask, the Kli Yaakov points out this question as well as the question before, what's the lashon of hayoyim today? It should just say, re'ei anochi nosein lefneichem bracha klola. What's the hayoyim? What's today? What's the significance of today? So again, these are the major, major kashas on this pasuk, and you could probably devote an entire shir to all the pshatim that are out there in the Mefarshim to deal with this kasha. So the Kli Yaakov goes the route that many Mefarshim go this route, that the bracha and klalas were given at Har Grizim and Har Evel. Har Grizim and Har Evel and Har Evel is when Klal Yisrael entered into a new level of relationship with each other. That's when we were introduced to this concept called Arvis. Arevim kol Yisrael zelzeh. Each Jew is responsible for another Jew. Now this is not just a feeling, it's not just a song, it has major halachic ramifications. The sugya of Arvis means that even though I already fulfilled the mitzvah, I can still do a mitzvah for you. Let's say, for example, even though I already read the Megillah, I can read the Megillah for you. Even though I already blew Shofar, I could blow the Shofar for you. Even though I already made Kiddush, I can make Kiddush for you. This is the sugya called Arvis. It's a real, meaningful halacha, not just a feeling. And therefore, Zakta Kliyaka, when did we obtain Arvis? We obtained Arvis when we first got to Hagrizim and Areva. What happened at Hagrizim and Areva? We also got the Bracha on the Klolis. Says the Kliyaka, that's the change between the Yachid and the Tzibur. Because when we have Arvis, says the Kliyaka beautifully, he says, because of Arvis, Rabbim Nitafsim Ba'avoin HaYachid. We're all one. So even the individuals, or even the Tzibur, gets schlepped out because of the Yachid. Means if there's a group of people that are living in a community and there's one individual and that individual is not behaving and you have the ability to change, to get involved, to make a difference, you're now held accountable for his shortcomings. Therefore, says the Kliyaka, the power of Arvis now impacts your life as an individual and it impacts your life with connections and with relevancy to the Tzibur. He then goes on to explain, so what's the Lashon of Hayoyim? Okay, Ayin Sham, he gives a teretz. That's a little bit, for me, a little bit harder to understand. But if you look in the Chayim Moshe, the Rav Moshe Bik explains that Hayyim is referring to Shabbos. Re'ei Anoichi Noisei Lefnechem, look what I'm giving you, Hayyim, I'm giving you this beautiful day of Shabbos. Brachu Kol, we know Shabbos is the Mekar HaBracha, we say in the Davening, we say in the Chadoidi, Ki Hi Mekar HaBracha. Everything stems from Shabbos. If you look at the Nesiva Shalom Sefer, much of his Chedushi HaTorah is focused around the Shabbos. He connects it to the Shabbos. So says the Rav Moshe Bik, that's the Hayoyim. The today is the Shabbos. That everything is connected, the Shefa, the Kedusha, all the Bracha and Klolis, everything is connected to the Shabbos. I'd like to suggest perhaps, the reason why the Torah is telling us the Lashon of Re'eh versus the Lashon of Shemiah is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not just telling us, you know, you have two paths. You can pick the good side or the bad side. He's telling you, look at a life of good and look at a life of bad. Lahavdil. Watch a movie or watch a screen of someone who's living a destructive life. Now you can go online. It's sad to watch. You can watch, you know, addicts, people that have drug addictions, heroin addictions. And you watch their life being ruined. Some of these people started out as very normal, regular people. They had a family, they had a spouse, they had children, they had a job, and they got addicted to heroin, and slowly but slowly they're living now outside, and you just watch their life deteriorate, and you watch it with your own eyes, and it shakes you to the core. It says to yourself, look what type of path you can end up with living such a lifestyle. Or you can watch a video of someone that has a beautiful life, he's happy, has a family, he has a job, he takes vacations, he relaxes, and you watch that, and it gives you a certain sense of what you want your life to be. So perhaps Hashem is saying, it's not enough to hear about the two paths. I want you to see a life of happiness. I want you to see what life could be if you choose the mitzvah side of life. You'll be happy, you'll be satisfied, you'll feel good, you'll be motivated, you'll be in a good place. As opposed to the life of Klola, it's not a happy life. It's a destructive, although maybe it sounds nice, not to have to wake up in the morning for Shacharis and not to have to be restricted to Shabbos and Kashrus. You think it sounds like it's a good life, but if you take a look and you'll watch that lifestyle, these people are not happy. They're searching, they're unhappy, they find emptiness. People that have religion, they found the Kadosh Baruch Hu, they found Torah Mitzvah, they find that they're satisfied, they're satiated, they're fulfilled in their lives. So maybe that's why the Torah is telling us to look instead of just to see, instead of just to hear. Rabbi Asher Weiss in his Minchas Asher has a different pshat. I think it's also a very, very beautiful pshat. Rabbi Asher Weiss is really coming off of the Kliyaker's idea that the Pasuk is telling us that in life there's the Yachid and there's the Tzibur. And it's a dual relationship that we all have. We're all individuals, yet we're all part of the greater Tzibur. That's just the reality. We're all part of a greater Tzibur. We're all part of a shul, we're part of a community, we're part of whatever we're part of. By definition, we're part of something bigger than just ourselves. But we also have our own individual capabilities and talents and chesroinus. So we always have in Klai Yisrael this dual relationship between our own individuality and being part of the greater Tzibur. Rabbi Asher Weiss happens to say this somewhere else where he talks about that Klai Yisrael is sometimes compared to stars and sometimes compared to the sand. And he points out that the stars and the sands are very different. A star, it stands out by itself. The sand by itself is very useless. One piece of sand does nothing. But when you put thousands of pieces of sand together, it now becomes the place that protects the water from coming over. So he makes this observation other places in the Sefer that we all, as Klai Yisrael, we have dual roles. We have the individuality of a star, right? A star shines by itself, irrelevant to those around it. And then we have the time where we're sand, where we're part of a greater light. So said Rabbi Shlomo over here, the lesson of this week's parish is, every yochid has to figure out, how can I help the tzibur? Every yochid, every individual has to say to himself, what can I do? How can I be more helpful? How can I be more of an assistance to the greater public? I'm not just living for myself. It's not just about me. It's what can I do to help society, Klal Yisrael, my community, my neighborhood, my shul, my institutions, my organizations. And that's the juxtapose of the yochid and the rabbim, is for every yochid needs to figure out, every yochid needs to spend time. Again, it's not easy. You actually have to give it some time and thought about where can there be improvement and what can I do to improve a situation, whether it be on your block, in your shul, in your community, in your yeshivas, in the organizations, whatever it may be. Every yochid has to figure out where he could be more helpful for the tzibur. Other mefarshim say a different teretz. They say the anoichi, the individuality with the tzibur, is that, you know, very often we're all part of a tzibur, but when it comes to the reward, we're going to be individuals, meaning HaKadosh Baruch Hu understands that we're all part of the greater tzibur, but our level of schar and einish will be relevant to our individuality, based on what we do as individuals. The Daz Zakenim writes that the word re'eh is very interesting. He learns that re'eh is that Moshe Rabbeinu says like this. Moshe Rabbeinu says to the Jewish people, re'eh anoichi, look at me. Shebacharti b'toivim. Moshe Rabbeinu is telling the Jewish people, look, I'm exhibit number A. Look at me. I chose the blessing side of life. I chose the happy life, the good life. Moshe Rabbeinu is telling the Jewish people, look at me. I picked this path. You can do it also. So then Lefi Zed, the Re'eh, is much more geshmak. We asked, why does Moshe Rabbeinu say look instead of here? Because Moshe Rabbeinu is looking at himself and saying, look at me, guys. I'm exhibit A. I'm the biggest proof in the world. I decided consciously to lead a life of Torah and Mitzvahs. Yes, obviously Moshe Rabbeinu had many talents that we're not accessible to, but all the Mefarshim speak about that we can reach high levels if we try. Moshe Rabbeinu was just telling us, look, I did it, you can do it. The same way I reached and I grew and I strived and I became who I am, you too could become a great person. And Moshe Rabbeinu is teaching us a very important lesson with this statement. He's telling us that very often, you know, we have leaders today, especially in the political world, where they tell you one thing and they do something else, right? You have different mayors and governors that make a mask mandate, but then they break it. You know, they're above the law. The mayor in Chicago, other places, and they don't live by example. Politicians today don't live by example. They're one big walking steer. Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, look at me, guys. I'm not just telling you. I did it. I lived a life of this. I did it and you can do it. So Moshe Rabbeinu is really giving the Jewish people the lesson of life, of living a lifestyle, not just saying it, but actually doing it, and teaching us that we can do it as well. Other Mefarshim like to say that the Lashon Re'eh Anoichi is that we all have to look inward. We have to look at ourselves first. Now very often we like to fix the world. Again, I always tell people, you know, if I had to write all the complaints and all the things wrong with my neighbor, I'd have a list a mile long. If I have to write all my flaws, it would take me a long time to come up with a handful. Why? Because it's much easier to point out the flaws of someone else than to point out your own flaws. And people don't like to see their own woman, the Gemara says. So here the Torah is saying is, Re'eh Anoichi. I want you to look inside. I want you to look at you first. Before you start going with Nechem, before you start looking at the Tzibur and saying how everyone is so bad and everyone needs improvement, look inward. Look at what you need to improve. Look at what you can be better at. Look where you can fix your shortcomings before we talk about the communal and the public's shortcomings. Now, of course, every tzibur and every community has shortcomings and every tzibur has problems and it needs to be fixed. But very often, we need to look inward first to see what we can fix about ourselves and then we can talk about fixing other people. There's another lesson from this opening pasuk that many, many point out. Is that the Torah is telling us something also very important. Back to the Lashon Re'eh. We start off with the kasha, why is the Torah use the Lashon Re'eh? And the answer is, the Torah is telling us, Re'eh anoichi nois lefneichem hayoim. I'm putting in front of you today, bracha uklola. Sometimes in life, the bracha and the klola is hard to see. We don't like to see, we don't know what we're seeing. what looks to us as a klala might be the biggest bracha, and what looks to us as a bracha might be the biggest klala. The pasuk is telling us it's all how you look at it. You have to look at something to see the bracha. Sometimes beneath the surface lies the bracha. You don't see it initially. You don't understand it. To you, it looks like the biggest klala in the world. But if you look deeper and give it some time, and you'll analyze it differently, you'll realize that perhaps it is a wonderful and amazing bracha. We'll quote one last pshat that I heard from Ephraim Goldberg. I think it's also very, very important. He points out that the emphasis on the pasuk is the word hayoyim. Hashem said, I'm giving you a day. That idea that every day could be our last day is a bracha or a klala. Right? The fact that we're all mortal and we don't live forever is the biggest bracha and the biggest klala. Because why? On one hand, you say, listen, what was Esav's attitude? Esav's attitude was, listen, I'm going to die anyways. So why do I need all these restrictions, limitations, regulations? Let me live it up, party it up, and I know I'll die when I die. The other attitude is a person says, I'm going to die soon, or life is short. You got to accomplish. You got to learn more, do more chesed, do more tzedakah. So the fact that we have hayyim, the fact that we have a fleeing day, that itself presents bracha klal. It presents us with a beautiful bracha to maximize the time we have on this world. Or it could be the biggest curse. We waste the few minutes, hours, days, years in life that we have in this world. Again, a person zeichet to 90 years, it's not a lot of time. Life goes by very fast, and we don't often use our time and maximize it to its fullest. So life itself is a bracha uklala. It's all how, again, so it's really everything in life is a bracha uklala. It's how we look at it. It's how we process it. Rabbi Aaron Cutler explained once, famous Gemara in Brachas, it's actually brought down in Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch tells us, halacha lemaisa, that we have to look at negative as positive. Kishem shemavarach ala toiv, kach mevarach ala ra, we have to. The Shulchan Aruch's lashon is actually interesting. The Shulchan Aruch says, yeh adam raga loyma, a person should get used to saying, kishem shemavarach ala toiv, mevarach ala ra. How is a person supposed to be mevarach ala ra? A person loses a lot of money, he loses a family member, he's in pain. How is he supposed to make a bracha? So Rabbi Aaron Cutler said he's supposed to say to himself that this is the biggest gift for me. Because through this pain, through this yesurin, I am now getting a little bit of my gehenim knocked off. Says Rabbi Aaron Cutler, if you looked at it like that, it would be much easier to deal with the ra. Because you look at the ra not as intrinsically bad, but this is now saying that now I just chopped off 20-year sentence of gehenim. Rabbi Aaron used to give a mashal. Person goes to the doctor and needs to have a massive surgery to save his leg. And in the process, it hurts. The surgery hurts a little bit. So is the person going to be all upset at the doctor? He says, no, the doctor is the best person in the world. Yes, I'm going through a little bit of pain, but that pain is the surgery, and the surgery is what's going to save my leg long term. Said Rabbi Aaron, here also, yes, we go through pain and suffering, Yisurim and Anshim, but if we looked at it as this is our ticket out of Gehenim, this is going to be sweetening the next world for us, says Rabbi Aaron, it's a little bit easier to deal with it. That's how Rabbi Aaron Cutler explained the message of but the truth is, as we continue to read the psukim, you'll notice something which the Mefarshim also point out. How's the Torah read? Esa bracha, the blessing. Asher tishmu, if you listen on mitzvahs, Hashem elokeichem, asher anachim mitzvah eschem yom. If you listen to the mitzvahs that I'm commanding you today, v'haklola, how do you end up on the curse side? Im lois tishmu al mitzvahs, Hashem elokeichem. If you don't listen to the mitzvahs, v'sa'atem en aderech, and you go off the path, asher anachim mitzvah eschem yom, l'lechas acharei alim achirim ha'shalei datem, and you go after idols that you don't know. There's one word that seems to have been omitted from the pasuk. The pasuk should have said, you know what it means to be on the mitzvah side? Es habracha asher ta'asu es mitzvois Hashem aleikeichem. It's not about listening, it's about doing. And when it comes to the klala, it's not about not listening, it's about not doing. Why did the Torah not focus on the doing and the not doing, but it focused on the listening and the not listening? It's a kasha that Mefarshim asked. So I think the answer is that the focus really over here is that the listening leads to the doing. When a person listens to HaKadosh Baruch, he follows, he studies, and he learns, that will help him do the right thing. When he doesn't listen, I don't want to hear, people say, I don't want to hear halacha, don't tell me halacha, don't tell me rules, don't tell me regulations, don't tell me restrictions. So of course you're not going to do. The point over here is not the doing and the not doing. The doing and the not doing stems from your desire to listen or not to listen. If a person wants to listen to HaKadosh Baruch, then he'll keep all his mitzvahs. If a person makes up his mind he doesn't want to listen, so then automatically he will not do the mitzvahs. So the focal point here is the listening, or I can add to that, it's the learning. If a person wants to know how to be better, or even Hashem, he has to learn Torah. The more Torah you know, the more better off you'll know how to keep his mitzvahs. If a person wants to be better at any given mitzvah, now is the time to study up on that given mitzvah. It's interesting, the Mata Ephraim writes, the famous of Ephraim Zalman Margolis in his classical sefer on the Yom and the Royim up till and including Sukkot, he writes that during Elul, where we're not too far off, it's a time where a person is supposed to be a fashvesh b'maisav, a person is supposed to look into how he does mitzvahs. You know, am I benching properly? Am I making brachas properly? Am I doing everything properly? So sometimes the only way to look into them is to study them up thoroughly. Now, it's not always possible to learn all of Shulchan Aruch and every mitzvah that we have. So we try, as many mitzvahs as we come across, we try to learn up more about them, study them more in depth, get a better handle on the halachas. This way we can do the mitzvahs in a more proper way. Okay, then the Torah tells us, we're going to jump a little bit, then the Torah tells us in Perek Yud Beis. Now we're going to be jumping into specifically in Yonei Eretz Yisrael. Now for the next couple of psukim, we're going to talk about what's going to happen when we move into Eretz Yisrael, which is a chapter that Moshe Rabbeinu never got to see. It's again, it's heart-wrenching to read through Sefer Devarim to see how much emphasis Moshe Rabbeinu put on the future of Klal Yisrael, knowing good and well he will never be part of that future, specifically the part of Eretz Yisrael, which was a part so dear to him, so desired by him, although he never merited to get there. Which is pretty amazing. You know, before COVID, we can do what Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't do. All we need to do is hop a plane, it could be in Eretz Yisrael in 12 hours. My son's Rebbe was just telling us, he was decided last night, last minute, he took a flight, he was in Eretz Yisrael, tonight he's in Eretz Yisrael, right? You can do it. And now with COVID, it's a little bit more complicated. Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't get into Eretz Yisrael, no matter what he did. He couldn't get into Eretz Yisrael as much as he wanted, as much as he desired. We spoke about that in other parashiyos. Moshe Rabbeinu's deep desire to enter Eretz Yisrael. But at the end of the day, he didn't get in. We can do what Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't do. It's an amazing, amazing thing to think about. But in any case, Moshe Rabbeinu is teaching the Jewish people of what to do in Eretz Yisrael. So the Torah tells us, these are the chukim and the mishpatim. Asher tishmur and lasses that you're supposed to guard. That Hashem gave to your forefathers an inheritance. Again, another important lesson. Hashem didn't give this to us, you know, today in 2021. This is a long-lasting Yerusha given to our Avos. This is not our land. This is our Zayda's land and our Alta Zayda's land because we come from Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And that's something we often don't think about. We'll talk a little bit about it more tonight. That one of the lessons in Parshas Re'eh is what we call shtotz. A Yiddish shtotz. That Jews have to have a little bit of ego. Now, I don't mean ego where I look down at you and say I'm better than you because I'm Jewish. Not in a negative way, but in a very positive way. That we have to remember where we come from. We're B'nai Malach, we're dignitary, we're better than them. Not that I look down at you, but I say to myself, I can't do what you do because I come from a different place. The same way a Ben Melech would never do things a regular person would do, he's just not raised that way. It's a pasnisht. We'll talk more. Yaakov Emden spoke a lot about this idea that we have to have a certain amount of shtolz. I think the Lashon was Aza de Kedusha he uses. We have to have a shtolz of Kedusha that we're not regular people. We're not regular Americans. We're different. We're B'nai Malachim. We're children of Avraham Avinu. Our forefather was Avraham Avinu. He was a different person. So that's why Hashem is reminding us, this Eretz Yisrael was not given to you today in Tavshin Pei Aleph. Eretz Yisrael was given to your forefathers. But when you go there, you have to get rid. You got to rid all of the avodah zarah. And the Torah gives you details. You got to burn them and destroy them and chop them down. Get rid of them. Annihilate all of the avodah zarahs in Eretz Yisrael. And Rav Shechter quotes from Rabbi Soloveitchik that someone once taught Rabbi Soloveitchik that maybe that it's a chelik of the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. And since today you can't really do that, you can't go to all the avodah zarahs in Eretz Yisrael and destroy them. You can't burn down the churches. You can't do all that. So it might be lacking in the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael today because we don't have a full mitzvah b'shlei Musa. The full mitzvah is not just to live in Eretz Yisrael, it's to live in Eretz Yisrael and destroy. Now, we can't do that today. You're going to get, the UN will not be very happy with us. CNN and MSNBC will be running, you know, running wild, you know, if the Jews go around burning churches and burning, you know, other houses of avodah zarah. So therefore, might be a shtickle lacking in the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. But in any case, the Torah is very adamant that you have to get rid of all these avodah zarahs. And the Medrash says why? The Medrash says an interesting idea. I always thought Pashup Shah and the Pasuk was that you have to get rid of these avodah zarahs because you're going to learn from them. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not that, I don't like to say he didn't trust us, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew that we're very much affected by our surroundings. And this is another message that comes out a lot in this week's parasha. Human beings, it's Mefarshei Rambam, human beings are very much affected by their surroundings. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, listen, if I'm going to leave these avodah zarahs floating around, it's just, you got to pick up from them. The mashal I like to give is when a person goes on a diet, and he leaves in his house cookies and cake. So no matter how strong you are, it's very, very easy to fall into the trap of eating the cookies and the cakes because they're in front of you. You want to be successful on a diet, you get rid of all that stuff. It's not in the house. If it's not in the house, you're much less tempted. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, listen, I love you, Klal Yisrael, but I know you're human. You have natural desires. So if I leave these, if I desires, again, I'm not talking about bringing them into the shul and bringing them to the base of Midrash Chas V'Shalom, but if they're going to be in your neighborhood, you're going to walk down the street, you're on your way to yeshiva, you see another desire, it might catch you, it might schlep you in. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing this a favor. So listen, rid your house of it, rid the neighborhood of it, get rid of the cookies and the cakes. This way you'll have a successful diet. Here also, Hashem says, listen, to make it more feasible or to limit the taiva, let's just get rid of it out of sight, out of mind. But the Medrash says a different shot. The Medrash says, why do you have to rid the Avodah Zarah? So the Medrash says, because all of these objects brought takala to a person. All these objects were used to sin, to do Avodah Zarah, which even Goyim are not allowed to do. Therefore says the Medrash, if Madoch, an object which was used to cause a person to sin, has to be destroyed, has to be ruined, has to be gotten rid of, a person who causes someone else to sin, which we'll talk about in this week's parasha as well, the meisus u'meidiach, a person who tries to cause another person to sin, he's so much more worse. If madoch, an object that was used by someone else without the consent of the object, was used for avodah zarah, was used to cause someone to sin, the Torah says, demolish it. What about a person who caused another person to sin? You can only imagine how terrible the Torah looks at such a person. Then the Torah writes, after all of this, Pasuk Dalet, but loy sasum kein Hashem Elokeich. Don't do this to Hashem your God. Don't do what to Hashem your God? So Rashi learns that don't do aveiros that will cause the Beis Hamikdash to be destroyed. Rashi has a couple of pshatim, but his last pshat Rashi says, Eloshloy tasu kimaseim. Don't act like the goyim. The yigrumu avoyneseichem lemikdash avoyseichem sheicharev. Don't do avoydezor and other mitzvahs that will cause the Beis Hamikdash to be destroyed. Of course, we're not talking about a person who's going to go actively and destroy the Beis Hamikdash. But rather, says Rashi, don't do avoyres that will cause you to do, that will cause the Beis Hamikdash to be destroyed. So Reb Henoch Leibowitz in the Sefer Chedusha Aleiv asks a very basic question on this Rashi. You know, you're trying to convince people not to do avoyres. That's your selling pitch. Your selling pitch is don't do avoyres, because avoyres will cause the Beis Hamikdash to be destroyed, and that's like doing what the goyim did. What do you mean? Don't do avoyres, because avoyres are bad. A very, very interesting observation. Meaning, if you want to try to tell the people don't do avoyres, say don't do avoyres, because avoyres are against Hashem and makes Hashem angry. What are you telling me now? Don't do avoyres, because avoyres will cause the Beis Hamikdash to be destroyed, and you're causing the Beis Hamikdash to be destroyed. It's like you're burning it down. It's like what we're supposed to do to the goyim. You know, just say it simple. Don't do avoyres. So I think Reb Henoch points out, you know, sometimes we don't think, you know, sometimes we need an extra additional factor to keep us on the straight and narrow path. You know, sometimes not doing an aveira is not good enough. You know, we have taiva. But if we know that doing this aveira will lead to the churban beis hamikdash and will lead to us being like the goyim, so that already is enough of an incentive for us not to want to do it. The famed Kotzke Rebbe has a different shot in this pasuk. The Kotzke Rebbe says, you read the pasuk like this, Loi sasun Cain, Lashem Lekecha, means like this. When it comes to Avodas Hashem, don't just do Cain. Cain means, okay, you know, I'm doing my thing. I'm doing a mitzvah, I'm doing Hashem's will, but I'm not really all that excited. I'm not enthusiastic about it. I'm not living it. I'm not feeling it. It's just Cain. It's so, you know, this is what I do. I get up in the morning, I daven because that's what I've been doing for the last 50 years. I go to Shir because that's what I do for 50 years. I give tzedakah because, you know, that's what everyone does. Says the Kotzke, Loi Sasun. Don't do mitzvahs Cain, just so. Like so. That's just what I do, that's who I am. How many times do people say, oh, this is just the type of guy I am? No. You do mitzvahs because you're excited there. It's supposed to change who you are. You're supposed to have much more feeling and emotion, says the Kotzke Rebbe, when you're doing mitzvahs. But the last pshat on this pasuk is one of perhaps my favorite pshatim from Rav Moshe Shtenbuch. Moshe Shtenbuch says, L'isasu Cain Hashem L'keichem, but you have to understand, right? We have this mentality that we see our desire, we burn it, we destroy it, we rip it, and that's what Hashem wants you to do. Says Rav Moshe Shtenbuch, you might say to yourself, you know, what happens if there's a shul down the block that, you know, does things I don't agree with? No, they do things I don't agree with. They do this, and that. Again, I'm not talking about Reform conservative even, I'm talking about in the world of Orthodoxy. And I'm not saying it's mutter to burn down a Reform shul either. But even in the Reform of Orthodoxy, I don't agree with that. I'm going to destroy it. Well, what do you see from the Pesukim? Anything you don't like, you destroy. Avodah Zarah is bad, we destroy it. The shul down the block with the rabbi is bad, let's destroy it. That's not the way you deal with Judaism. You don't agree with someone's path in life, That's fine. That does not give you the right, the permission, or the mitzvah to go around burning, destroying, and being violent. Sadly, we see so often in Eretz Yisrael, we see this violent mentality of destroying and ripping and burning and vandalizing. It's heart-wrenching. It's heartbreaking. It's unacceptable. I don't know who sanctions this, and I don't understand it. But the loisasim zok the Torah. That's not the way we deal with Jews we don't agree with. We don't destroy them. We don't burn them. We don't hurt them. We can disagree ideologically. We have all the permission in the world to disagree ideologically, but we have to show proper respect. We have absolutely no permission to be mazik each other. There was a big meeting in the turn of the 20th century amongst the different gedolim about how to deal with certain major issues at the time, and there was a very, very strong machloikis between Reb Chaim Brisker and the Meshech Chachma Reb Meir Simcha Ben David. And Reb Chaim was very strong against the Reb Meir Simcha, to the point that when Reb Meir Simcha spoke, Reb Chaim basically turned his back to show, like, I don't agree to what you're saying. He was very, very sharp, very strong against Reb Meir Simcha. I think it had to talk. I think the discussion was about having, you know, rabbis learning Polish and Russian, about, you know, secular education in the yeshivas. And Reb Chaim was, I forget already who was on which side, but Reb Chaim and the Reb Meir Simcha were mamish on the opposite sides. So when the knisa was over, so Reb Chaim told one of his talmidim, okay, let's go visit Reb Meir Simcha to wish him goodbye. So he said to him, what do you mean, go visit Reb Meir Simcha? You guys are arch enemies. You're screaming the whole time. You guys don't agree. So what does one do with the other? We disagree ideologically, but Reb Meir Simcha, the Arsameach was the gadol, was the Rav of the Vinsky, was a Chashev Yid. I want to say shalom before I leave. So often we have to be able to separate the politics from the people. I quoted this from the head of the Naturi Karta, which I probably don't quote that often. There's a difference between hating the Shita and hating the Bala Shita. You might disagree with the Shita, but don't hate the Baal HaShita. Don't hate the person. And that's what the Torah is telling us. Don't treat Jews like that. Don't go around destroying, burning, vandalizing things you don't agree with because it's not in line with your Messiah, or it's not in line with your Chinuch and your tradition. No, that's not the way we do things. That's not the way we behave with each other. The next pasuk, the Torah is now referring to the Beis HaMikdash. It says, Kim el ha-makim ha-sheif char ha-shem ha-kechem kol shetichem ha-sun ha-shem ha-sham. However, the place that Hashem chooses to, from all His shvatim, to place His name there, the shechnois to yeshuva to shama, there you will go, and there you will be. It's an interesting thing that the Torah never tells us exactly where the makam hamikdash is. Rabbi Chaim discussed this in his sefer. This idea that we actually have to look and search and be humble to try to find exactly where the Beis Hamikdash is, instead of Hashem just laying it out on a map. Here, Beis Hamikdash, right here. There's something to this significance of us having to work, having to toil to figure out, to be omul, to know where exactly the Beis HaMikdash is. And then the Torah goes on for a bunch of psukim to discuss the role of the Beis HaMikdash. Ba'aveisim shomo le'seichem b'zivcheim, you will bring your kabanis there, and your maisris, and your truma, and your nedav v'nedavos, and your b'chayrois. You'll eat them there. Usmachtem, and you'll rejoice b'chom mishlach yetchem, atem uvateichem, you and your family, asher berach Hashem lekechem. Then it says, again, that the idea that you'll have karbanis, you'll have meiser and truma, and you'll feed it to your family, your b'neichem u'b'neiseichem, your sons and your daughters. So there's a shitas mishayin in the Rashba and the Raivir, I think it's in the Dorim, that they hold that a b'char is only nechal to zchar. Meaning the b'char, that's one of the things that the father, a kohen, gets. He's not allowed to feed that to his daughters, only to his sons. So they point out that the psukim don't sound like that. The psukim sound like all these gifts to the kehanim are going to be eaten by him and his family, including his daughters as well. Okay. Let's fast forward a little bit, because we have a lot to cover. There is another concept in this week's parasha, but the Torah tells us, the Torah says later on, the Torah says in Perek Yud Gimel, the Torah says, "Eskol adavar shanechi mitzav eschem oisayis tishmer lasayis, all that I command you to do, you should do. Loisayseif aloy veloisigram menu. Do not add onto the mitzvahs and do not subtract from the mitzvahs." So this is the famous lav of Baal Tosif, that we are not allowed to add on to the mitzvahs of Torah, nor are we allowed to subtract from the mitzvahs of Torah. So we mentioned this many times, we'll mention it one more time, the famous Vilna Gaon. We actually had a whole shiur on this on a Sunday morning, I believe before Rosh Hashanah. Michael will have to check the year and time, but sometime before Rosh Hashanah, we spoke about Baal Tosif. We spoke about by Rosh Hashanah, about whether or not blowing all these extra kailas runs into an issue of Baal Tosif. So the sugya of Baal Tosif, the way the Vilna Gaon points it out, there's two ways a person can violate Baal Tosif. Either you could take a pre-existing mitzvah and add on to it. Let's say, for example, it says in the Torah, Basukas Teish Shivas Yom, supposed to sit in the sukkah for 7 days. So in Chutz La'aretz we have another day. But I decide I want sukkahs to be 10 days. 7 days is not enough for me. I need 10 days of sukkahs. So that's Baal Taisif. You took an existing mitzvah and you added on to it. But says the Vilna Gaon, there's another type of Baal Taisif. Baal Taisif means you make up a mitzvah, Yesh Me'ayin. Not that I take a mitzvah and add on to it, but I make up a mitzvah there's a mitzvah to eat. There's a mitzvah to eat Chinese every Tuesday night. There's a mitzvah to eat sushi every Monday night. I made up a mitzvah. Says the Vilna Gaon, that's why the Torah writes this in two places. This is not the first time the Torah teaches us the love of Baal Taisif. The Torah taught us, I believe, in Parshas Ve'eschanan as well. Says the Vilna Gaon, because one place the Torah is telling me there's an issur to add on to a pre-existing mitzvah. And the other time the Torah is telling us there's a mitzvah to make up a mitzvah from nowhere. The problem with this pshat is that if you look in Rashi and Chumash, in this week's Parsha, and in Parshas Ve'eschanan, when Rashi describes the lava Baal Taisif, Rashi gives you the exact same example in both places. And what's the example? Rashi says you put more parshias of tefillin into your tefillin, or you take more things in your lulav. What are those all examples of? Those are all examples of taking a mitzvah and adding on to the mitzvah. So the Achareinim ask, if Rashi held like this Vilna Gaon, that there's two types, so why didn't Rashi write in one parasha, Parashas Ve'eschanan, Rashi should have wrote that it's making up a mitzvah Yesh Me'ayin, and in Parashas Re'eh, Rashi should have said it's taking a mitzvah and adding on to it. Rashi writes in both places the exact same example. The example is taking a mitzvah and adding on to it. So L'chayri, the diyuk could be from Rashi, that Rashi holds there's only one type of Baal Taisif. There's only the Baal Taisif of taking a mitzvah that exists and trying to add on to it. The Sfona writes something very important over here. The Sfona writes, the Sfona says on the pasuk, "Lo yisoysef Allah v'lo yisigra mimenu." Who writes the Sfona? Ki ulai toysef dover nimas etzloi. Nimas etzloi yisbarach kemoi sheyem tirtzel lahoysef mina avoidus lakel yisbarach shlepam tia avoid anosef es dover nimas etzloi. He says, "What's so wrong with adding?" Says the Sfona, because your addition might be repulsive to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You think it's fantastic, you think it's amazing, but Hashem is saying this is terrible. You think what you're going to add to the Torah is helping HaKadosh Baruch Hu, making him happier, but it's very much the contrary. What you're adding is really very much taking away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this is something we grapple with. We started at the beginning of the shiur with this. This is something we grapple with. How do we know what we're doing, our addition is not angering HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or rather it's making HaKadosh Baruch Hu happy? So Rav Hanoch Leibowitz explains the way we know this is that's the beauty of what we call a Messiah. We have a tradition. Things were done a certain way in Klal Yisrael's history. We follow the Messiah. Now again, obviously there are certain times where that's not always so feasible or applicable. Let's say, for example, with the advent of technology, there's no Messiah on transmitting Shurim vis-a-vis the internet. Right? So the answer is we have to sometimes figure out what we think Messiah says on such a topic. But when you're trying to figure out, you know, La'avdil, the conservative shuls, they say, you know what, reform, whatever. They say, no, they think Hashem would want us to have a microphone so more people can hear the lecture. That's a very noble idea. But Hashem is cringing. What are you talking about? You mean Michal Shabbos with every sound into the microwave, in the microphone. So we have to be able to ask ourselves, the hisofa that we think we're doing might not really be bringing simcha to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's the Sforno's point. Because you don't know what's going to make Hashem happy or not, you have no right to add. Because maybe your addition is not really bringing simcha to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then that opens us up to the next major chapter in this week's parasha, the Navi, the Navi Sheker. So the Torah describes what's going to happen. You're going to have a Navi, legitimate Navi, real deal Navi. Or a dreamer. What does it mean, a dreamer? Not just a Malcolm X, you know, I have a dream. A person who says, I had an epiphany, and in the dream, Hashem told me that you're supposed to do something against the Torah. And he's going to bring you signs. And he's going to say, Hashem told me in the dream, he wants you to eat on Yom Kippur. Hashem wants you to go after him. Don't listen to him. Zok the Torah, don't listen to such a person. If a Navi or a dreamer or anyone comes and tells you to not follow the Torah, you are not to listen to him. So now many of us read these psukim and we say, oh come on, when did this ever happen? So the truth is, if you go back to the to the 1600s, the Jewish people at the end of the 1600s were dealing with a very difficult time. Right after Tach V'Tat, right after 1648, 1649, the terrible Terumah Chmelnytskyi in Ukraine, so many Jewish people were killed, so much Jewish life was lost, so much financial so much financial strain on the Jewish people. The Jewish people were very depressed. And they were looking for optimism in life, and along came what we know today as the Shabtai Tzvi, and he started a very strong movement of people that believed in him. And there were many, many people that got swept away in the Shabtai Tzvi movement, choshev the people, good people, because he was very compelling and he was very convincing. Now, he didn't exactly say to go against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but he definitely gave off a persona of a legitimate Navi and maybe even Mashiach. So the Taz, who was living at that time when the Shabtai Tzvi movement first got going, so the Taz sent his son to investigate this Shabtai Tzvi. What's he all about? And the Taz's son comes back and he tells his father, listen, he's legit. He's got it all. Everything seems to add up, except there's one thing. He slept, I watched him sleep, and he slept in a prakton position. The Gemara says, brachos, you're not allowed to sleep. You're not supposed to sleep in prakton. What's prakton? Either means on your back, or means on your side, on your stomach. Cholikis b'shoyin by Kriya Shema. But the point was, he was varying from one slight halach. So the Taz said, he's a fake. So the son asked him, how do you know he's a fake? He said, because if he'd be real, he would keep everything to the detail. The fact that he's not doing that is a telltale sign that this Shabtai Tzvi is a fake. And obviously we all know the end of the story. The Shabtai Tzvi ultimately converted to Islam. But make no mistake, the ramifications of the Shabtai Tzvi movement, the Sabbathian movement, continued well into the 1700s. And even into the 1800s, the entire 1700s was met with a lot of tumbling about, is this person a Shabtai Tzvi? Is he a Sabbathian? Is he not? That was a lot of the argument between Rabbi Yaakov Emden and Rabbi Yonatan Eibschitz. Rabbi Yaakov Emden's father, the Chacham Tzvi, dealt with this a lot, specifically in Amsterdam in 1710, I believe. A lot of post Shabtai Tzvi feelings lingered a long time in Klal Yisrael, because there were those even after Shabtai Tzvi converted to Islam who still believed that he was the Mashiach, and they still followed him and they believed in him. In the 1800s, there was a similar idea with Reb Chaim Volozhiner. There was a Yid who came to town, his name was Reb Baruch, and he had a whole new Mahalach in Avodas Hashem. He had this very different way of reaching the people. He used to give his drushes and shul. He used to make all of his drushes like a Maimon Har Sinai. He would take out the Sifrei Torah. He would open the Arun. He made a whole procedure. And Reb Chaim Volozhiner said, he's a scam artist. Reb Chaim Volozhiner said, no good. And people said, what are you talking about? Why is he no good? Well, he seems to be very legitimate. And Reb Chaim Volozhiner apostled him from the get-go. And people were upset at Reb Chaim Volozhiner. Why are you riding this guy? Why are you saying he's no good? He seems to work out. And Reb Chaim Volozhiner said, I'm telling you, this is this new Messiah, this new way of doing things. It's a sign that things are wrong. And then later on, it came out that the Matte Ephraim, Reb Ephraim Zalman Margolis, wrote a letter that he had proof that this Reb Baruch was treif, posel, and no good. So again, this is something we grapple with, of when are we following Messiah? And when do we have a right to step out and be mechadish new things? Right? You need to be mechadish new things. You need to come up with novel ideas, new things, but they still have to be in the backdrop of our Messiah. We can't start coming up with these new things that are not acceptable in our tradition. Now again, everyone's allowed to come up with a new idea. Rabbeim today grapple with new ideas and techniques on how to teach Torah, how to keep kids excited in 2021. But it's always under a basic Messiah of what Klal Yisrael has and what our Gedolim feel is within the realm of conservative, I don't mean conservative, but the conservative way of living life, meaning the old Messiah that we have from our Dairy Dairies. So what does the Pasuk tell us? You're going to have a person, he's going to try to give you all these signs, don't listen to him. Why? Ki menasa Hashem alekeichem eschem, Hashem is testing you. This is a test. Ladas, to know. Hayeshchem oyevim es Hashem alekeichem chol vavchem v'chol nafshchem. This is a test to know if you love Hashem. Says the Pasuk, this test is a test in your love to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Mefarshim will point out, why is it a test in our love? It's a test in our loyalty. So the answer is, that's what love means. If you really love Hashem, you're never going to listen to someone who says to go against him. How could you listen to the Navi say something against Hashem? You love Hashem so much, your love is so strong, that love equals that you follow whatever Hashem says. How can you do something against him? So this nisayon is really a nisayon of your love. How deep your love runs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and whether or not you'll keep his mitzvahs or not. Then the Torah tells us, Pasuk Hey, I'm sorry, in Pasuk. In Pasuk, hey, the Torah says, "Acher Hashem alekeichem teilechu, go after Hashem. Va'oisei siro, and him you should fear. Ves mitzvayisav tishmu, and follow what he says. Ubikoyli tishmo, and in his voice you should listen. But don't listen to this fake Navi, and this guy, you should kill him, run him out of town, and be art to haram mikvecha, get rid of the bad, get rid of this negative attitude that this person is bringing over here." So in 1929, there was a Knesia Gedoyla of the Rabbanim, and the Ger Rebbe got up and spoke. And the Ger Rebbe said, that if you look at the Psukim, when the Torah describes the Navi Sheker, the Mesis, it always talks B'lashin Rabbim. Because, says the Ger Rebbe, the only way to beat and to overpower a Mesis or Mediach or a Navi Sheker is with the Kayach HaTzibur. Said the Ger Rebbe in 1929, he said, today we're dealing with, everywhere we turn, they're trying to turn us away from Yiddishkeit. Now you have to remember, in 1929, contrary to what they like to tell the younger generation, in 1929 in Europe, it wasn't exactly this picturesque, perfect picture where every person was sitting and learning 20 hours a day. There were many, many Jews that were not Shema Torah mitzvahs. There were, someone even said, you know, Ki ein bayis asher ein shem meis. Almost every home had someone that was off the derech, including Rabbanim and Gedolim's children. The isms were so strong at that time, the communism, socialism, the different groups that were pulling Yidden away from genuine Torah mitzvahs. So said the Ger Rebbe, the only way we're going to be able to survive is if we come together as a tzibur. The power of the tzibur will help us be able to fight the strong taiva of all the things that are trying to pull us away from HaKadosh Baruch. The Chafetz Chaim asked the Ger Rebbe another question. Pasuk Hey says, "Acher Hashem alekeichem." After Hashem, we should go. So the Chafetz Chaim asked the Ger Rebbe that the lashon "achere" means in a distance away, not just behind, but richuk, distantly behind. So the Chafetz Chaim asked the Ger Rebbe, "Why should we be so far away from Hashem?" "Acher Hashem alekeichem" means we should be far away from Hashem. So the Ger Rebbe answered to the Chafetz Chaim, "You know, we have to have a healthy balance of av and yira. We can't be on top of HaKadosh Baruch Hu because we have to fear HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we have to be a step back. In order to appreciate and to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we have to have that Yira as well." The Pasuk says, "Uboy Sidbok," you should connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How do you connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So Rashi tells us, Hadveik Bidrachav, connect to Hashem's paths. What's Hashem's paths? Gemol Chasadim, do Chesed, Kibur Mason, bury the dead, Biker Chaylim, visit the sick, Kemoy Sha'asa, just like Hashem does. So we have a mitzvah to copy, to mimic the way of Hashem. Hashem does Chesed, we have to do Chesed. Rav Moshe Weiss points out there's another Gemara. We actually had this Gemara in our Sunday morning shiur when we learned the 19th paragraph of Shabbos. The Gemara says, Mahu chanun v'racham avato. Just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu is compassionate and giving, so do you have to be compassionate and giving. So Rav Moshe Weiss points out that drasha is not the same as this drasha. This drasha here is you have to do acts that Hashem does. But the next drasha of Mahu racham avato means you not only have to do it, you have to feel it. It's not enough just to do the Bikur Cholim. It's not enough just to do the Akvaras Ameis. It's not enough just to do the Chesed. You have to be a compassionate person. Because Hashem is deep down compassionate. Hashem doesn't just do Chesed because He has to. He does it because deep down He's compassionate. So says Rav Moshe Weiss, we too have to change our internal feelings and become compassionate, become giving, just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rav Pam points out, whose yard site is actually coming up, I believe, I think it's Rosh Chodesh El, is Rav Pam's yard site, not too far off. Rav Pam points out that the Torah says that a Mesis or a Novi Sheker, he gets killed even though he wasn't successful. What happens? A guy comes to town, he tries to convince people to follow his new found religion against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and no one joins him. Not a one. You know what happens to him? He still gets killed. Says Rav Pam, look at that. A person who tries to take Yidden away from Torah mitzvahs and is unsuccessful, he gets killed. Says Rav Pam, Kol Shekin, if a person tries to bring a Yid closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even if he's not successful, can you imagine how much reward he gets? This is Mamish talking to those that are involved in Kiruv or those that are even involved with Talmidim. So often you put a lot of time and effort into your children or into your Talmidim or that, you know, that person you work with and you're trying to convince them to become from and take on more mitzvahs and they just don't seem interested. And you get very rejected and you get very dejected and you give up. You say, what do you mean? I spent so much time working on this person. Says Rav Pam, you're going to get unbelievable reward for that.
Because if the Torah is going to punish the Maces and the Navi Sheker for attempting to sway Jews away and being unsuccessful, you who try to bring a Yid closer to the Kadosh Baruch Hu, even if you're not successful, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will still very much reward you and give you unbelievable amounts of schar. Then we move on to the next part of the Torah. We have the Maces, which is similar to the Navi Sheker. People that are trying to convince you to sway off from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, do not listen to them. Then the next major topic is the Ir HaNidachas. What's an Ir HaNidachas? Where the city is a city of Avodah Zarah. The rov of the city is doing Avodah Zarah. So what do you do with such a city? So the pasuk says everything has to be burnt. That's kosher law. All the booty, all the possessions, all the objects have to be gathered into the center of the city. And you have to burn everything's got to go. Nothing stays, nothing remains. Says the Medrash, even if there are a few Yechidei Tzadikim in the town. Let's say you have a town that rove of the people do Avodah Zarah, but there's a minority, there's a miut that's not doing Avodah Zarah. They also have to have all their property burned. Why? Says the Medrash. Because you lived in a community of bad people. Says the Medrash, a beautiful idea. The Medrash says, you know what? You had no business living amongst these bad people. So even though maybe you're not a bad person, you didn't do Avodah Zarah, but Oyle Rosh, Oyle Shechina. Don't associate, don't live, don't be near. Don't pick a house around people that are not living a life that is good. So again, we're seeing over and over again the theme that we mentioned in the beginning of the shir, the power of those that are around us, those that are near us, those that are often affect us in a negative way. Then the pasuk says, after you do all this, Hashem will give you compassion to be compassionate. So the Aruch Haim HaKadosh explains, as well as many others, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving us an unbelievable gift over here. You know, you just went over to your Jewish neighbor, who's an Avodah Zarah, and you took his property and you burnt it. That creates an achzarius in you. It makes you now an achzar. It makes you now a brutal, destroying person. So Hashem says, no. If you're doing it for the right reasons, I will give you extra siyata d'shmaya that you'll be more compassionate. Because normally brutality breeds brutality. A person acts in a very brutal, very gruesome, very violent way. He becomes a violent person. But here the Torah says, no, here I'm not gonna let that affect you. Because you're doing it l'shem shemaim, you're doing what you're supposed to. So even though you have to necessarily, you have to go out and do something which requires violence and the opposite of Jewish values, but Hashem will ensure you don't lose that rachamim. The Chafetz Chaim said that one of the downfalls of World War I was this, was the exposure to violence. Everyone saw violence, everyone was involved. It makes you desensitized to the thing around you. To quote Golda Meir, she says, I can never forgive the Arabs for turning our good Jewish boys into murderers. You have to go to war, you have to kill. It has an effect on you. So here HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises you, I will make sure that you will retain and you'll keep your level of rachamim, even though you have to do some barbaric, some violent activity, you will not lose you will not lose your rachamim. We didn't even get to Revi'i yet. Revi'i talks about the idea of Banim Atim LaShem Elokeichem. We are children of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore lo yiseskoy didu v'lo yisesimu karcha b'neinechem meis. We are not permitted to cut ourselves. We're not permitted to bold ourselves over the loss of a dead family member. What exactly is the connection between being children of Hashem and not cutting yourself? So Rashi learns, is like we were mentioning earlier from Rabbi Yaakov Emden, that we're better than that. We have a certain prestige. We have to look a certain way. We can't have scratches and bald spots on our body. We have to look a certain way because we're royalty. Other Rishonim learn, is that what are you going to get? Why are you so sad because someone dies? You think that's the end of it? You don't believe in Tchias HaMeisim? You don't believe in the neshamas having an afterlife? But we're children of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We believe in more than that. Or others say it's slightly different. We believe that Hashem is our father. So maybe we lost our physical father or our physical mother, but we have a greater HaKadosh Baruch Hu's parent in our life. So much more to get to. Let's just, with the moment, a few minutes that we have left, I want to say over a word from the Satmar Rebbe, the Divrei Yoel. Today Chav Vav Av is the yard site of, well, it's already over, but maybe in Satmar they keep a bit of time, maybe it's still a few more minutes. Today was the yard site of the great Satmar Rebbe, the Divrei Yoel. I only know that because it's the same day as my son's Hebrew birthday.
my son Meir, so that's why I know it's the Satmar Rebbe's yard site. So today was the yard site of the great Satmar Rebbe, one of the great Gedolim of our generation. He was nifted in the end in 1978, 1979. One of the great, great Gedolim, who sadly, it bothers me that so many people speak ill of him because of his opinions on Eretz Yisrael, what he thought of Zionism. It's wrong on so many levels. He loved Yidden more than anyone you can imagine. Whatever his opinion was vis-a-vis Zionism is a halachi discussion. You're more than happy to sit down and go through his svarim and see and learn. But there's absolutely no permission on and I've heard this from historians who've spoke so disrespectful about Rabbi Yoel, it pains me. I've said this story over many, many times, that Rabbi Ephraim Greenblatt, who was a very close Talmud of Rabbi Moshe, and whenever Rabbi Moshe finds he didn't know something, he was stumped or not sure, he would send Rabbi Ephraim Greenblatt to ask Rabbi Yoel Teitelbaum his opinion on something. Now, this doesn't mean that Rabbi Moshe and the Divya Yoel agreed on everything. They did not agree on everything. They disagreed on many things. We spoke about that at length when we did the Sugya of Mechitza. But Rabbi Moshe would send his prized Talmud to Rabbi Yoel to see what he says or his answers. So Rabbi Yoel Teitelbaum does not need my endorsement, but I think it's just wrong that people are very quick to disrespect him in a way which Poshet. It hurts when I hear it. There's no room for it. There's no place. Rabbi Yoel Teitelbaum was a great Talmud Chacham. He left us his Shas and Tshuva, his Divrei Yoel. His Divrei Yoel and Chumash is beyond unbelievable Ga'inus. He was an amazing Talmud Chacham, and we have no right to speak ill of him. But just to say a vart that he said over to be Mekayim saying Torah on his yard site. Rabbi Yoel Teitelbaum, we mentioned last night, was also one of the few special people that made it on the Kastner train that was saved right in 1944 when Hungary was being quickly emptied of all its Jews that were left. But Baruch Hashem, Rabbi Yoel was saved on the Kastner train together, we mentioned last night, with Rabbi Yonason Steif and some other Gedolim. Maybe one day we'll talk about how exactly Rabbi Yoel made it onto that train, because Rudolf Kastner was a very, very big Zionist, and Rabbi Yoel Teitelbaum was definitely not a Zionist. So how exactly did Rabbi Yoel Teitelbaum get onto that train? So maybe we'll leave it for next week, and Halach Sher, we'll talk about how Rabbi Yoel. But the way the historians say it is that when Rudolf Kastner picked the 1,600 and change people to make it onto the train, he wanted to make all parties happy. So he picked some Zionists, some anti-Zionists, some people in between. So he picked Rabbi Yoel to be on the train, and Baruch Hashem, Rabbi Yoel survived the Holocaust, and we benefited immensely from him. But in any case, that was just a short divrei, hespit on Rabbi Yoel. But in any case, what was Rabbi Yoel Teitelbaum's word? His word was the following. We say in Chamish in this week's parasha, Aser to Aser. So the Gemara tells us in Maseches Tainis, Aser b'shvil shatis asher. A person should give a tenth, because by doing so he will become wealthy. So we discussed at length in Halacha Shurim the significance of Maaser Mamon, the idea of giving a tenth of your money today. Is that derais? Is that rabban? Is that a minig? Do you still have the haftacha of Aser b'shvil shatis asher? So Rabbi Yoel said the following word. Rabbi Yoel said that in Shmini Atzeres, in Chutz Laaretz, we read Aser to Aser, and in Eretz Yisrael they read V'zayis HaBracha. Said Rabbi Yoel, that's the pshat. When we read Aser to Aser, and we read that Aser B'Shvil Shita Aser Sher, the brachas come to where? V'zayis HaBracha, the bracha goes to Eretz Yisrael. Because we give off our Maaser, and we give the brachas, and we give our tzedakah to our Achenu B'nei Eretz Yisrael, and they get to reap the brachas, and he said the brachas bounce back as well. They bounce back to us, because we're the ones who are giving the Maaser. We therefore merit to see unbelievable bracha. So I just wanted to get that vart from Rabbi Yoel in, and to mention his yard site, which is Mamish was today. We'll leave off with one last story, another Gevaldiga story about the mitzvah of tzedakah. In this week's parasha, we have the mitzvah of tzedakah. Again, the mitzvah of Maaser is different than tzedakah, but the Torah talks about the mitzvah of tzedakah in this week's parasha. Just an amazing story about the Alter from Kelm. The Alter from Kelm had a dream. And in his dream, Rabbeinu Yoina, the Rishon, Rabbeinu Yoina, came to Kelm to give a Musar Shmus. So the Alter from Kelm was so excited. All the people from Kelm were coming. They were filing into the Beis Medrash to hear a Musar Shmus from the great Rabbeinu Yoina. And the Alter from Kelm comes to the door, and there's a security guard there. And the security guard says, what's your name? He says, Simcha Zissel Kelm. He says, I'm sorry, you're not allowed in. And the Alter was so disturbed. What? I'm not allowed in to hear the great Divrei Musar from Rabbeinu Yoina, the Rishon. He couldn't understand. And he was saying, listen, I have Talmidim, I have this, nothing. The guard wouldn't budge. And then he said, my son is Reb Nachum, Nachum Velvel. Oh! He said, your son's Reb Nachum Velvel? Come in. You're now accepted into here the drasha from Rabbeinu Yoina.
And the Alter woke up the next morning and he was so disturbed by the dream. And he met his son. He said to his son, listen, you got to tell me what's going on. So his son told him, I think this is what happened. He says, you know, I was saving up for a pair of shoes. I needed a new pair of shoes. And I found a beautiful, gorgeous, fantastic pair of shoes. And I saved up, penny by penny, week after week. And I finally bought the pair of shoes. And one day, an oni came knocking at the door. And he said, you know, I need shoes. And I took off the shoes and I gave it to him. So the altar said, oh, now I understand. All that I did in my life was not enough to merit to hear Rabbi Nir and to give a drasha. But the tzedakah, the chesed that my son did, giving up his hard-earned pair of shoes, that was the ticket into that special arena. So again, the Torah focuses on the importance of tzedakah, the importance of ma'aser. We spoke a little bit about this on Sunday. Tzedakah tatzah mimavis, the power of tzedakah, when we're willing to give, and especially when it comes to ma'aser, aser b'shvil shetis asher. Person gives ma'aser, the money comes back. HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises us, chanuni no b'zayis, you can test me. It's tested and proven that people that give ma'aser of their mammon, they give a tenth of their money away to good organizations, to Torah, to other things, their money comes back. Okay, so that's a little bit of what's discussed in this week's parasha. Wishing everyone a wonderful Shabbos and a wonderful week. Mitzvah Hashem, Sunday morning, we'll be back in person as well as on Zoom.